Well, good morning. I'm Butt Hicks. I'm chairman of the committee, and I think we'll get started. We're running a little late this morning, so we'll move right along. The date is Wednesday, November 16, 2022. It is now 11:10 in the morning. The first item on the agenda is the roll call to determine quorum. Maria?
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Here.
Ms. Novacell? Mr. Rice? Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. I will now go over the remote and in-person meeting rules for the day. For the members of the public who are joining us remotely, to observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov. Under the calendar header, click on Governing Board Hybrid Meeting for November 16, 2022. There you will find a link to the public webinar hosted on Zoom. To address the committee members directly with your comments, please raise your hand in Zoom by clicking the raise hand at the bottom of the screen at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the committee. If you have used the dial-in numbers to join us by telephone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and to be unmuted. To remote committee members, if you wish to speak, you can also raise your hand in Zoom. You will find the hand icon on the bottom of the screen. Remote committee members may not use the chat box to make any comments or to have sidebar conversations. Please remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. Finally, I would also ask that all remote members turn on their cameras if they are able. Members of the public who have joined us in person, please raise your hand at the appropriate time for public comment, and you will be called on to the front to speak. Committee members who are in person, please raise your hand if you wish to comment and speak clearly into the microphone in front of you. If you are viewing the webinar on a personal computer, please ensure that your microphone and speakers are turned on to prevent audio feedback to the room. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the, I'm sorry, the next item is approval of the agenda. I would ask the staff, are there any changes to the agenda? Okay, if there are no changes, we will deem the agenda approved as posted. We are now on agenda item number 2, approval of the minutes. We have a set of minutes from the November 21, 2021 meeting. Does any member of the committee wish to make a change? If not, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes as presented. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. That brings us to agenda item number 3, presentation of the on-site biomass energy unit to be proposed by South Tahoe Refuse. Information on this item can be found on page 237 of your packet. At this point, I'd like to pass the meeting to Kat McIntyre, our TRPA staff member, who will introduce the other people with her here today on this matter. Kat?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. As mentioned, my name is Kat McIntyre. I'm the Forest Health Program Manager here with the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. And today, in addition to myself presenting, you will hear from Jeff Tillman from South Tahoe Refuse and Megan Hartman from Wisewood Energy, and she should be online. Megan, if you could turn your camera on just so we know you're there. Yep, I see her. Perfect. Okay. And we'll get started. Next slide, please. So the overview of the presentation you're going to hear today, I'm going to provide the history and background of biomass utilization in the basin and just some of the environmental context. Then you'll hear from Wisewood Energy, from Megan on the proposed project and the project proponent. So Jeff Tillman will stand up and give us a bit of background on South Tahoe Refuse, and then Megan will get into the proposed project, and I will wrap it up with the next steps. Next slide, please. So to provide a little bit of environmental context of what we're talking about right now, I would assume that everyone on the committee really knows that forests today are at risk for a variety of reasons. There's been a century of fire suppression paired with commercial harvesting of the largest trees that's left our forests homogenous and overstocked with small diameter trees and lots of ladder fuel. So many of the forests, particularly in the Sierra Nevada, actually lack the resiliency to survive natural disturbances that they had been living with for centuries, including things like insects and disease and drought. And we all know that this is just being exacerbated by climate change. So on the right side, you see, you know, a pretty basic diagram of what a healthy forest at the top looks like versus an unhealthy forest at the bottom. And you can see the unhealthy forest is overstocked. There's lots of ladder fuels, lots of dead and dying. And so we're really shooting for, you know, what the top looks like. Next slide, please. This is another just great graph that I pulled up while I was putting this presentation together. This is the historical versus current trees per hectare for multiple sites in the Sierra Nevadas. And so that dark green bar you see are the current trees per hectare versus the light green bar are the historical trees per hectare. And overall, some, you know, scientists are saying that there's anywhere between 3 to 5 times as many trees today that there were historically in the Sierra Nevadas. So again, we are just dealing with heavily overstocked forests in the region. Next slide, please. And as I've noted, this is all just being exacerbated by climate change. So the first graph or the first image you see are maps of wildfire across the state of California through decades. And what it's really exemplifying is that we're having more fires and they're getting bigger and bigger. So in the 70s, we had, you know, a few fires, they were a pretty average size. And now we're getting mega fires that just are burning across our landscape. And as I noted, this is all being exacerbated by climate change. The snow melts sooner, we have drier conditions. It's just fueling our fires more and more. And then the last infographic, this comes from CAL FIRE, is the top largest California wildfires. And as you can see, about 2/3 of that are just 2021 to 2020. When you add in 2019, it's just, you know, 3/4 of our largest fires have occurred within the past 5 years. And so we're really dealing with a huge issue in the state of California. Next slide, please. And we are all relatively familiar with this. The Angora fire burned through in 2007, burning approximately 3,100 acres and 254 structures and homes. That was the impetus to get the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team together, to get our multi-jurisdictional wildland fire strategy together, and to really increase pace and work around the basin. And we've made great strides. Since then, we've been able to treat approximately 89,000 acres in the basin, and we are just continuing to get more work done. But as we saw last year with the Caldor fire, climate change is coming and we are seeing it faster than ever. The Caldor fire was one of 2 fires in recorded history that crossed the Sierra Crest, the other being the Dixie. And so again, this just really reinforces the critical nature of the work that we're trying to get done in the basin around forest health and wildfire risk. Next slide, please. So with all that in place, I want to give a bit of background on biomass in the basin. So in 2010, there was a proposed 2-megawatt commercial size biomass facility in Kings Beach. And when I talk about biomass, I'm talking about taking green waste or taking logs, pieces of trees, limbs, chipping them and using them for energy production. And so this was a 2-megawatt facility that was proposed by NV Energy in Kings Beach. Almost immediately, there were concerns about this facility in terms of air quality, noise, traffic, proximity to community services such as schools and a Boys and Girls Club. And then shortly after that, protesters and people in opposition came to Tahoe, you know, came to the TRPA, and it became very clear that there was not a pallet at the time for biomass energy production in the basin. And so in 2012, during the regional plan update, a prohibition was included in our code of ordinances to prohibit the acceptance of applications for these types of facilities. Next slide, please. So digging into what this code language says. So it's one brief sentence, chapter 65.1F, biofuel facilities. It says TRPA shall accept shall suspend acceptance of applications for biofuel facilities until further research demonstrates the safety and environmental compatibility of such facilities. It is important to note that it does not expand upon what research looks like or, you know, who can lift that prohibition. Additionally, when we talk about biofuel facilities, that is also defined in the code, and that is a facility that combusts or gasifies forest and or plant materials in a manner that, in combination with other systems, generates electrical energy for use of distribution or generates heat for distribution within a building or facility. So it has really hamstrung what we can and cannot even see as an agency, this code language. And so staff came together and we, brainstormed and felt that it was possible if we could get the appropriate information from Wisewood Energy and South Tahoe Refuse showing the environmental health and safety compatibility of a potential facility, that staff felt that that information had the potential to be sufficient at this time to allow one-time acceptance of an application. And so we are going to hear about that presentation right now. And so next slide, please. I'm going to hand it to Megan, and Jeff, I believe your slides are included in this. So if you want to come up here.
Great. Should I get started?
Yes, please.
Awesome. Great to be here virtually with you all. And thanks, Kat. That's a really great background and context for the broader picture of why we're talking about wood energy for South Tahoe Refuse. Again, my name's Megan Hartman. I'm the Director of Business Development for Wisewood Energy, and we've been supporting South Tahoe Refuse on exploring this opportunity. Also on the line, I do believe, is Andrew Hayden. He's the president of Wisewood, so he'll also be available if there's questions during the discussion period. Just really happy to get a little bit more into the details about what we have found as our of the estimated impacts of the system that we've been exploring for South Tahoe Refuse. Next slide, please. So we'll talk a little bit more about why we're here. Kat really covered a lot of that already. I'll hand it over to Jeff to talk more about the project background and what South Tahoe Refuse is currently doing with their operations. And then we'll get into a summary of the environmental and safety impacts that was provided in the assessment report that I believe that you all have had access to as well. Next slide, please. So in short, again, a lot of this Kat's already said, South Tahoe Refuse is exploring a small-scale net-metered wood energy system that will offset grid electricity and natural gas that they use at their site in South Lake Tahoe. The proposed system will use about 10% of the annual waste woody material that South Tahoe Refuse already receives at their site, processes, and currently transports out of the basin. We'll get into more of the details of each of those items. And as Kat said, in 2012, there was a pause instituted with the TRPA on accepting applications for all new biomass energy facilities, widely understood to be in response to that 2-megawatt power plant that was proposed at Kings Beach, and that ultimately was moved outside of the basin for consideration at the Cabin Creek site. So currently, South Tahoe Refuse is seeking a decision from TRPA to lift that pause just for this pilot project, which we understand would allow South Tahoe Refuse to proceed with a standard permitting process and to put the project forward again at a later time for actual approval. So that's why we're here today, to tell you more about what we found, the estimated impact, so we can get to that point. Next slide, please. I think I'm going to hand it over to Jeff for the next couple slides.
Hi, I'm Jeff Tillman with South Tahoe Refuse Company. And the next slide is, I just wanted to give you a little history on South Tahoe Refuse. We came here in 1962. I'm the third generation. And, you know, we have a franchise agreement currently with Douglas County, City of South Lake Tahoe, and El Dorado County. We opened and operated a transfer station in 1971 up here to start transporting material out of the basin. So we've been providing solid waste collection and recycling, you know, since 1962, and it's been a family operation that whole time. We can go to the next slide over here. We're currently located on 8 acres, which it says there. We, you know, process up to 370 tons of material a day. We, since we opened the transfer station, we have also opened a material recovery facility, you know, to sort through the solid waste and get the recyclables out. We have a buyback center, and the last facility we opened was a resource recovery facility where we're taking in all the organics. And you can see from that bottom photo there, you know, that's the resource recovery facility. And those organics that we're currently collecting are there. And these are the materials, you know, that we would like to use to move forward with this project. You know, one of the things we're proud of is our overall diversion rate, and that's refuse that's not going to landfills right now, is, you know, between 60 and 65%. We feel we can increase that number in the coming years, and that's one of the things we're focusing on right now. I've only got these few short slides, so there's not a whole bunch more to say about Sawtelle Refuse.
Great. You can go to the next slide. Thanks, Jeff. I'm sorry, click it one more time. There's an old animation in there. So to talk a little bit more detail about what's being proposed for the site, I really like to start framing wood energy in the context of different scales of technology. As some of you may be aware, there's quite a range of applications and technology options to generate energy out of woody materials. Whether it's generating just heat, which is you can see on the left arc of that arrow, or generating electricity. And there's some examples on the right side. Energy can be generated at very small scales. I think everyone's probably familiar just with a wood heater or a fireplace in your home, but when we're talking more commercial, institutional, just providing space heating at a single building with a boiler is pretty small scale on the heating side, and then can be much larger when you're generating process heating or steam for more of an industrial application, a brewery, manufacturing, that sort of application can also use wood energy at a larger scale on the heat side. When you're generating electricity, smaller scale application examples would include net metering, which we'll talk more about today and is what's being proposed for South Tahoe Refuse, where you're offsetting a single building or maybe a cluster of buildings' energy usage, to power export from a power plant. And there's many different scales there. We know there was a 2 megawatt proposed in the region here, but there's also much larger power plants in the world that do use wood energy, even over 100 megawatts. So those can be quite large, and it tends to be what more people are familiar with when they hear about wood energy or biomass. So I want to just put this out there to show that relative to the scales that are out there, what's being proposed at South Tahoe Refuse is a pretty small scale system. And just to clarify, I'll say CHP quite a bit, and it's combined heat and power. That's where both electricity and heat is being generated. Next slide, please. So what's being proposed at South Tahoe in summary is, as I said, a small scale net metered CHP, combined heat and power gasifier. The gasifier is the technology that would be used. Net metering means that it will be offsetting the energy that's used on site at South Tahoe Refuse, their facility there. There's not going to be any power sales to the grid like a power plant. We often talk about gasifiers in relation as an energy resilience tool, sort of like a conventional diesel or natural gas generator, because it acts in similar ways. Once you turn it on, you want to leave it on as long as you can. Unlike diesel and natural gas generators, this is a renewable source that, instead of just being an emergency backup, can actually be the primary source of energy for a facility because it offers that 24/7 energy generation versus something like solar that is intermittent based on when the resource is available. Because of that, that makes a gasifier CHP technology really valuable as an energy resilience tool for facilities or if, for example, critical facilities that where independence from the grid or shoring up the risk of grid outages is really important. Gasification as a technology is different from combustion. It doesn't combust the woody material, it gasifies it, which is like baking it with just a very precise small amount of oxygen. What's being proposed for STR is a 125 kilowatt system. That system at that size, we estimate will offset over 100% of the annual electricity, grid electricity used at their site. A little bit less than that when we're just talking about on an hourly basis. And over 90% of the natural gas usage could be offset with this 125 kilowatt system. So again, in context, that's about 1/16th of the size of the 2 megawatt power plant that was proposed. There's many examples of the type of technology that's being proposed and just other examples of that smaller scale, medium scale, modern wood energy systems in the West. For example, some that are listed there in red, you may be familiar with a project being moved forward at North Star Community Services District in Placer County, a heating system there with, I think, a little bit of electricity generation. Mount Bachelor Ski Resort in Oregon is moving forward with a district heating system that will provide space heating and snow melt for a number of buildings at the base of the mountain there. There is a 2 megawatt power plant that is, I believe, coming online in 2022 in North Fork, California. And we're also working with folks down in Tuolumne County on a similar sized 125 kilowatt system that would support their wood yard at that location. Just to give you a sense of some of the examples in your neck of the woods and here in the West. But there are even many, many more elsewhere in the world, and especially in other mountainous communities. There are some images there on the bottom for some examples. It includes gasifiers in Italy. The picture on the bottom left is a I think a 125 or 135 kilowatt system in Italy. The middle left is a small combined heat and power system in Quincy, California. Not far away. Then the other in the middle is a 195 kilowatt system or 190 kilowatt system at a meat processing system near the Dolomites. And then district energy is very common, especially in snowy, cold regions at ski resorts around the world. This one's in Lech, Austria, that's providing heating to a number of lodges and other buildings near the ski resorts in that area. Next slide, please. So now to get a little bit more in detail, there's a slide per topic here. And again, this summarizes information that's in the assessment report on the environmental and safety impacts we're estimating for this system. Next slide. So first, to talk a little bit more about fuel demand, we've mentioned this already. STRs currently, we average that they receive and process and transport about 10,000 tons per year on average. That material is coming from defensible space and fire mitigation activities in the region, green yard debris, clean construction and demolition material. Jeff had a picture of that in his slides, and you can see another here. That material that they're receiving, that volume is trending upward because of the fires in the area and really just increased encouragement to do more defensible space thinning around the community. And you can see the graph in blue is the annual totals that based on, and then the totals up through June, that was the data that we had available when we put this together. We can see that it's trending upward and Jeff's latest numbers there show that they've collected even more in 2022 than we were estimating. The proposed system that would offset again over 100%, the majority of their energy usage there on site would only use about 1,000 tons per year. So that's about 10% of what STR currently handles. And then one other point about fuel demand, again, given the context that Kat did a really good job of talking about, the project is not expected to incentivize new fuel reduction treatments to mitigate fire risk in the surrounding area because it really just has such a small fuel demand. However, we do think that it would contribute, if this pilot project were implemented, we think that it would contribute to a community discussion about the value of this type of what we'd call right-sized wood energy systems and how that plays into those broader goals to increase the community's protection from wildfires in the area. Next slide, please. In terms of traffic, SGR currently transports all that woody material that's been shipped at their South Lake Tahoe facility, about 50 miles round trip to the Carson Valley. You can see the typical route going through South Lake Tahoe. And the table shows what their current the current impacts of those trips are with no action if they were to just continue as business as usual, and then what that would look like with this gasifier. And you can see that in every row, it's slightly lower with the gasifier. Again, it's a small system, so it's not going to take all the material that they use by any means, but it will reduce the impacts of that traffic. We estimate it'll reduce truck traffic by about 72 trucks per year. So 72 less trucks driving through South Lake Tahoe to take that material out of the area. That is associated with about 3,600 miles per year less, round trip. And then of course, reduced associated emissions, the truck noise from that, and then other safety concerns of just the trucks going through the community. Next slide, please. We did some preliminary emissions modeling to look at the air quality impacts of this system. We estimate it would have very low emission rates with a potential offset needed for NOx. You can see in the table, we've got the emission thresholds for criteria pollutants for the air quality management district and the estimated emissions from the plant. And you can see that the plant is far below all of the thresholds, with the exception of NOx, which is pretty typical for generators. This is shown without emission controls. So we'd expect to be able to do some more detailed emissions analysis should the project move forward to a permitting phase to look at this more closely and look at appropriate controls technology. There'd be no visible smoke from this system during normal operations. The image that you see is from the 190 kilowatt system, so a little bit bigger. That's in the Dolomites in Italy. And this is actually, it's actually running at full blast with this picture, and you can see there's no smoke. We have a video of this as well. My colleague Andrew was there a year or two ago, and so he took some video of that system running for reference if anyone is interested in seeing that. As I said, we often think of these the gas fire technologies as very valuable as an energy resilience tool. And so sometimes it's helpful to compare that to other similar energy resilient technologies that might be deployed, like a diesel generator. So the graph in the bottom compares the emissions of the biomass system to a similarly sized diesel generator. The biomass is in blue, the diesel generator is in orange, and you can see that the wood energy system is much lower on those emissions when compared to a typical system that would be employed to mitigate grid outages. And as I mentioned, we'd expect that we could do further analysis on emissions if the project's able to move forward. Next slide, please. We considered site suitability and the footprint of the system. We've only done some conceptual design to see how it would fit alongside the current operations at the site. So what you see here is a picture of the area where the system would be located at their at the facility as it is now, and then a couple of conceptual renderings of how the equipment could be configured and where it would be situated alongside the existing building. So this is next to the resource recovery facility where wood chips are currently stored and shipped already. The SGR's site zoning is commercial mixed use. The primary use is miscellaneous improved industrial, so we wouldn't expect anything to change in terms of zoning for the system to be located there. The gasifier footprint is within the SGR's current impervious coverage limits. And there'd be no change necessary for SGR's current property footprint. There'd be no trees that would need to be removed. As you can see, the area where the system is expected to be located, there's not a whole lot there. It's used for some storage of bins and so forth. So there's a lot of space that can be worked with. And again, we would do a more detailed design and engineering process should the project move forward, where we would consider how the equipment can be configured and how it would be enclosed and what type of structure. So that would all be during a later phase to get a little bit more into the details there. But as it's shown, all of the equipment is shown just right next to the resource recovery facility. Next slide, please. For noise, we went and actually took some noise samples in the area back in July of this year. What we found is that STR's current operations noise level is about 63 decibels, and the average ambient daytime noise levels around the STR site is around 59 decibels. There are three components that are shown in the lower table. Three components of the gasifier system that would make noise, the most impactful in terms of noise, and that's the CHP engine, the engine exhaust, and then air compressors. So we modeled what the noise level would be for each of those components, and as you can see, the highest noise would be 60 decibels, which is below STR's current noise level that we sampled, and pretty close to what the average ambient noise level is during the day. And those current operations at South Tahoe Refuse includes waste collection vehicles, even pretty early, I understand around 1:30 or 2 a.m. to get going with the day's work, loading material for transportation and grinding materials, what they're already doing at their site. So we don't expect the gasifier would contribute to any increases in those operations and the noise of those operations. And as I said in the last slide, we'd expect the next phase of the project to include more detailed engineering to make sure that we're designing enclosures around the system and around those more noise-producing components to make sure that we're minimizing any impacts of noise for the community, the area around the site. Next slide, please. Finally, in terms of safety, as I mentioned, the technology that is proposed at STR has been installed throughout the world. There's hundreds of these applications that are currently operating, and that's including in urban and semi-urban environments. Operations typically involve a daily visual check of sensors and just flow of material. There's regular filter changes and other preventative maintenance and annual cleaning that's typical for any generator. There's no high pressure equipment, hazardous materials, or high risk equipment. So we're not really expecting to generate any unusual safety or operational requirements for having the gas fight there at the site. And STR staff would be trained to operate the system and would follow their typical protocols for operations there. Next slide, and I think is my last slide. So in summary, the proposed system will use waste woody material that's already being collected and processed by STR, just 10% of what they currently process. That will result in a decrease of the number of waste hauling trucks that are traveling out of South Lake Tahoe. We'll have minimal emissions and no visible smoke during operations and would be contained within the current property footprint. We estimate it will have similar noise levels as their current operations. We think that this will be representative of a distributed, small-scale renewable energy system, and it will offset on-site energy usage, not sell power to the grid. And it will be an opportunity to pilot this type of small-scale system that we think could really help meet local goals for 100% 24/7 renewable energy. Our understanding of potential next steps, should we be allowed to move forward with the project, would be to complete a more detailed analysis for permitting purposes and to develop the more detailed engineering where we would consider incorporate considerations for noise and emissions and so forth. And then we'd submit that permit application to TRPA. So there would be additional opportunities to review with TRPA and the public before final approval of this project. Next slide. This is it for us. So I'll hand it back over to Kat, and looking forward to any discussion or questions.
Great. Thank you, Megan and Jeff. Next slide, please, Tracy. So in terms of next steps, staff, as I mentioned, feel the information that was provided and we just saw from Wisewood and South Tahoe Refuge is sufficient to allow the TRPA to accept an application for review. A submitted application would come to TRPA's full governing board for final review in 2023. And there is the opportunity for staff to partner with the Tahoe Conservancy to look more regionally at biomass utilization within the Tahoe Basin, including things like feedstock availability with current levels of treatment, outreach and stakeholder engagement regionally, site suitability, to look a little bit more broadly at what are the opportunities region-wide. And as we go forward with discussion and questions and comments, we would love to get feedback on that as well. So next slide. So with that, I will open it up to comments. And then Chuck, who is a senior planner here in long range planning, is also, he's been invaluable in helping us put this together. And so he is also here to help field questions if needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. And thank you, Jeff and Megan. Very informative. I do have one question. And I'll come around to our other committee members and to John Friedrich, who's very interested in this topic and as a fellow board member. My question is, this is a gasifier type system, which I'm not familiar with, or I wasn't familiar with it until I read the reports. What type of system was tendered back in 2010 for the North Shore project that generated such opposition? Was it this type of system?
I believe it was a gasifier, but Megan's our technology guru, so I'm going to kick that to her.
It was a gasifier. It was a gasifier, and there's different vendors for gasifier systems, and they come in different scales. So broadly speaking, the category of technology was gasification, but the vendor and the scale of it was different.
Well, thank you. Well, at this point, I will ask my committee members for comments, but I'd like to, first of all, offer John Friedrich opportunity to speak to us. He's in that district and he has an interest in this. And in fact, it was John who brought this topic up last year. So, John?
Well, I just want to say thanks to everyone for the great presentations. I was really impressed by the assessment in the packet. I read it all. Great historical context, state of technology, and stating the purpose and need. Our fire chief submitted a letter of support, Jim Drennan, last night in our council meeting. We moved forward with the plan for more defensible space crews for seasonal crews to go out and just get a lot more fuels reduction work done in the city. So the volume of wood chips is going to continue to grow. And it was interesting to see in the report that only 1/10 of the current supply is needed. So to me, and as was mentioned, at the same time, we're moving forward very strongly in the city toward achieving our 100% renewable 24 hours a day, 7 days a week goal. And I think you really can't do that unless you have a base load source like biomass. It is, you know, substitutes import of natural gas. And so you avoid CO2 emissions, some NOx associated with and combusting natural gases as well, avoiding the NOx and other emissions from wildfire, avoiding emissions from trucks traveling down the hill. And I think this could be and obviously a good solution for STR, which then gets offset all of their energy use. So we really think it's a win-win-win-win solution, very strongly supported. And I guess a question that I would have is, what is the most streamlined version of an application and review and approval that can be envisioned? Because to me, it's something that is strongly supported in the city and it appears to be fairly ready to go. So what would that look like? I mean, I know you talked about later in the year for considering an application, but is there a fast path where we could get to this sooner than later?
Yeah, that's something we can talk about with the applicant and STR and Wisewood. I would think that depending on, let me back that up. I just talked to one of our planners, Shannon Freeman, and she did mention she feels this will probably need to do a CEQA analysis. But again, that there are different levels of CEQA analysis. So once we started having that discussion, we could figure out what was the most appropriate level. And then depending on potential impacts, I think you could do a expanded checklist through the TRPA, but again, that it depends on the preliminary information that comes out in terms of just the environmental analysis. So I think there's room to have that conversation. Yeah. And I was, I'm looking at John Marshall.
I don't know, it's in my eye. The wrong button. John, the real, you know, the question that we're presenting right now is, can we even accept the application? So this study was really used to get over that first hurdle of accepting an application. So then they have to generate an application with a lot of the same information that we presented here, but there needs to be some more information that's going to have to be generated. And so that's going to take a little time, but I think the agency is committed to process that application, you know, almost like not that it is an EIP project, but EIP-like because of its, you know, potential for reduction in truck trips and potential increase in air quality emissions.
Okay, and then I guess given that information, maybe it's for Wisewood or SGR, what would you see as the timeline for construction with you know, the application and review process, and then also any fundraising that, you know, needs to happen with CAL FIRE or other sources, and then just the, you know, construction of the unit itself? What are we looking at?
Yeah, I can jump in, or Andrew, if you're on you could speak more to the construction side.
Yeah, constructing the unit would take about 12 months from, you know, turning the first dirt on the project. So 12 months after permitting would be the, you know, the fastest the project could be implemented, is what I would say.
And that was Andrew. He's the president of Wisewood.
Thank you. Do any of the other committee members have questions? I see, Ashley, you have your hand raised. So let's open it to Ashley, please.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much for the presentation. Really appreciate it. And I was part of creating the Bioenergy Action Plan for California in 2012 and trying to get that string of pearls, small biomass facilities in the Sierras that got hampered by the PUC many years ago. So it's great to see you all trying and putting this effort forward. And I guess, you know, in response to what John Marshall was saying about can we even accept it, I think it would be great to look at in this presentation and thinking about it for the broader TRPA, thinking about the environmental benefits. I know with environmental impact statements, you have to look at the impacts, but thinking about the benefits in terms of a reduction of ladder fuels, you know, an increase in healthier, more biodiverse forests, when you think about doing the type of thinning that actually moves onto these facilities, and then producing more localized energy, right? So reducing reliance on the wires that often spark these fires that threaten the basin. So maybe adding in some of those components as well, so that we can think more holistically about the environmental benefits would be really helpful. And then additionally, thinking about localized jobs, right? Thinking about reducing transit for people leaving the basin for jobs. If there are jobs for construction and for operations long-term of the facility, that could also be reducing VMT and actually keeping people in the basin, you know, inspiring more economic development in the basin as well. So just thinking about ways to think more strategically and more holistically about the benefits would be helpful. And then I had a few questions. One was just, when you showed the increase in NOx emissions, is the region within NOx compliance, right? In other words, does that increase in NOx emissions change anything for the local air district in terms of compliance?
There's two levels, Ashley, that you're talking about. I think one is just kind of like a project review level. And I think we're aiming in, I think the presenter can correct me, but I think we're trying to get below the individual air quality, El Dorado County air quality districts,
yep,
standard of significance for a particular project emissions. I think it gets there through the set off of the reduction in truck trips. And so that's kind of the analysis that we just kind of, it's a little more than back of the napkin, but it needs a little more rigor.
Okay.
To be able to run it through our environmental review process.
Okay, thanks. And then just a recommendation would be to, I would encourage you to reach out to a guy named Elliot Vanderkolk at the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. It looks like you know him, Megan, but you know, we received this revolving loan fund to put in small scale biomass facilities in Tuolumne as part of a HUD grant in 2015. And so he's been doing a ton of work on that and may have some support and insight to help in the process. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Ashley. Any other member of the committee have any comments? Yes, Haley.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. This builds off a little bit of what Ashley just said in just some more holistic, I think, questions I have, or maybe analysis, is if this is 1/10 of the biomass coming off the hill, what's happening to the rest in Carson City? What's going on with it in the Carson Valley?
Yeah, and I this is Kat McIntyre. Megan or Jeff, you can correct me if I'm wrong. When it goes down to the Carson Valley, I believe it was originally going to like Bentley for composting. And then it can also alternatively go to the actual landfill, where I think it is spread out over top of the waste that's out there right now, but I might be wrong. Jeff.
Yeah, but we use two different composting facilities down the valley, you know, and this material goes for composting. One of the concerns that we have is, as this goes on, one of these facilities may not be there. So we're looking for alternatives. There may be some other ones open, but it is compost right now. Some of it can be used for alternative daily cover at a landfill, but that's not the best use for it. We'd rather see the compost.
Thank you for that. And another question for South Tahoe Refuse. I think it's a little interesting we're comparing this technology to diesel. I'm just wondering, why do you have a diesel facility right now? Why are we looking at diesel as the comparison?
I can respond to that. They don't. They're natural gas right now. They receive natural gas, and it's a fair point. We considered whether it was helpful or more confusing to include the comparison to diesel, but we did so because it's diesel generators are often just the conventional option for a backup energy generation when you're trying to mitigate grid outages, which is something that these gasifiers are, it's a really good use of these gasifiers instead of using a diesel generator. So it's not exactly what's comparative to what is, it's not a business as comparison to business as usual for STR. It was, the intent was more to just show a comparison of emissions to something that folks might be more familiar with, being a diesel generator, but it's not what they're currently using.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And in the day and age of PSPS and PSOM, I appreciate that diesel is becoming more widely used. I wonder if it might be helpful as well, though, to see the comparison to business as usual, to what they're pulling from the grid, if that might be an analysis that could be included in terms of emissions and just how that stacks up, just out of sheer curiosity.
Yeah, and to John's point earlier, I would think that that's something we would do in the next level of analysis. At this stage, it was more just looking at what the gasifier would emit and then the impact on traffic and truck emissions at that level. But we knew that there was another level or two that we could go to and that we'd probably want to if we're able to move forward in the project and including compared to what their current system is using natural gas.
Makes sense and totally appreciate that. Last point on that then, and this you also mentioned, I think, to be fair, in the next round, so definitely understand why it wasn't here, but some of the NOx technology to offset that emissions that raises the NOx, if there's any more background or information you could give us on some of the scrubbers or whatever else is available, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah, Andrew, do you want to just mention some briefly about that?
Yeah, so there's different levels of technology to remove NOx. So we would, if we move forward in the permitting process, kind of lay out those different options and show the operational aspects of them, you know, the various costs benefit for how much reduction you get. So at the smaller scale like this, there's not as many options as there would be as a larger scale, but there's lots of different options. So but we start each process by showing the uncontrolled emissions just to kind of let everybody know, you know, essentially the worst case. And that's what the permitting authorities usually want to see. They want to see, you know, worst case emissions. And then after that, you start adding in controls. So that's how we would approach this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other committee members have comments? I'd like to make one comment. As a former member of the Bi-State Fire Commission following the Angora fire, this was one of the topics that we discussed, and that there was a recommendation, as I recall, that this two states and TRPA look into this in the future. And of course, it was a question of the technology that was available at the time. And also there's a sensitivity about the public response to this type of facility. You know, based on my experience with the fire commission, I'm 100% behind doing something like this. I think the time has come. We aren't making any final decisions today. John, if I understand, we're not making a recommendation or a finding of any approval of this, are we?
You are not. So there's no action from you. The next step will be for the executive director to accept that application based on the report you just heard. And okay. Then that will start the processing and analysis of the individual proposed
project. Does that take authority from the governing board to tell the executive director to accept that application?
No, we've made a determination, and we can discuss it if you'd like, that the executive director doesn't say in the code section how the process for lifting the moratorium, but in terms of just accepting an application, we believe that to be in the discretion of the executive director.
No, thank you. Well, with that, we will open this to public comment, but I would like to thank our presenters. I'd like to thank our staff. As I said, I think this is something that's long overdue. I'd like to thank John Friedrich, who really brought this to everyone's attention last year and got us moving on it. So thank you all. And with that, we will go to a public comment. Any members of the public who are in person here in the audience, please come forward. Do we have any people in the audience? Let's see. Let's turn this over then. We have no one here, so I'll turn it over to staff to manage the muting and unmuting of any persons in the public who wish to comment who are on the Zoom call. Maria?
We have a couple hands raised. Steve Teixeira, you'd like to address the committee. Go ahead.
Thank you, Maria, and good afternoon. Just afternoon. Chairman Hicks and members of the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee. This is Steve Teixeira on behalf of my company, Sustainable Community Advocates. Really appreciate the leadership of all the folks that were involved in bringing this item forward to the committee today. As the chairman noted, we have newer technology. Things are different now. We have different needs than what was on the table a couple of years ago in Kings Beach. And it's time to move away from the absolute prohibition from these types of facilities in the Tahoe region. There's just too many other environmental benefits that we can't accomplish. So just wanted to encourage the committee to support the next steps and to keep track of this as it goes forward in the planning and environmental review process. I want to thank the family involved at South Tahoe Refuse and all their team for the leadership. Jeff, thank you for bringing this forward and for the experts that you had today to talk to us about how this works. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else, Mario?
Next, we have Norma Santiago. Please go ahead and address the committee.
Good afternoon. Norma Santiago, representing the South Fork of the American River Collaborative. I am a member of the biomass working group there. I wanted to there are two things. First of all, to let you know that so far is very much in support of this project. Additionally, we have a similar project that we're working with Wisewood and the Black Oak Unified School District. Down in the West Slope, essentially utilizing net metering for those same kind of energy offsets, as well as there's a workforce development component to that. And as I was talking, we were talking about all this material, hopefully with the success of the pilot project, you can then see some of these smaller units being used in places like Lake Tahoe Community College, who isn't producing any of this any of the biomass material, but could utilize those materials, thus minimizing more those truck traveling to the Carson Valley. My next question is more of a procedural one, and John, I'm directing this, John Marshall, I'm directing it to you because I wasn't clear as to the whole thing with the language that's currently in the code. Do you foresee an exemption to this language in order for the permitting to proceed, or would there have to be a language change in the code as proposed by staff that Kat showed us?
Good afternoon, Norma. Good to hear from you. I think there's two, we're pursuing this on two tracks. One is we're essentially lifting the moratorium on one particular application as a pilot project. And at the same time, I think Kat reported on doing a more in-depth analysis, looking at changing the language to the code on a basin-wide basis. So that would, Norma, would be when we would see a general lifting of the moratorium and either a modification of that language or removal of the language. So that's kind of the process. Kat, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think you nailed it on the head. Yeah.
And so my next question, I'm sorry, my next question is, if I may, I think John had, John Friedrich had asked this question. And it wasn't clear. Once we talk about the general lifting of the moratorium and introducing the new language into the code about, and you said you talked about analysis, how much time do you foresee that taking?
Probably, Kat, do you want to talk about our anticipated work with CTC?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned, there's an opportunity to work with CTC. The Conservancy would be able to give a grant to TRPA, and then we could fly an RFP to do a more regional look at this type of technology and feasibility in the basin. I would assume, or I would like to see, if we were doing something like that, a stakeholder engagement process, a communications plan, sideboards on what type of technology we're looking at in the basin in terms of size, scale, location. And I could foresee that, you know, an RFP would probably take 2 months to fly, a month on the street, you know, so that's, let's say, 3 months to get someone under contract. And then I would say a couple months for them to produce that information, and then doing, having that information, is that adequate enough to then change the code, write new code language, bring that in front of the board? I could see around a year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Norma. Any other comments, Maria?
Next, we have Sarah Letton. If you'd like to address the committee, go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm Sarah Letton, Sustainability Coordinator with the City of South Lake Tahoe. We submitted, our city manager submitted a letter in support of the application, and I'm just wanted to just say a few words in support of the project. This project, from the city perspective, helps us achieve a number of goals articulated in our climate action plan. We have some very ambitious renewable energy goals that makes this project very interesting to us. And we also have an organics procurement mandate here as a our jurisdiction for through SB 1383, for which it's only possible to look at biomass energy projects to help us actually achieve this the state mandate. So for a lot of reasons, we're very curious and interested in seeing this this project go through, where we want to see if, you know, this might be a viable, clean, scalable technology that can, you know, help us achieve some clean, firm, renewable energy in the basin. So we're just grateful that SCR is taking you know, leadership here. They're a tremendous partner, and just wanted to express our support for the application. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. And I would also note that we had Fire Chief Jim Drennan from the city of South Lake Tahoe give us a letter of recommendation. I was very impressed with his letter because it really went to the issues that we addressed following the Angora fire.
Yep,
any other public comment, Maria?
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to make public comment.
Yeah. Shelley Aldine on the governing board has a question. Shelley?
So I'm trying to visualize this timeline in my mind. This is a pilot project. So before we put out an RFP, before we, obviously there'll have to be an amendment to the code, obviously, exempting this project as a pilot project from the current moratorium.
No, no, there won't. You know, internally made a determination that we can accept an application given the information that's been presented to you for that particular project. So very limited lifting of the moratorium for one application.
Right, well, that's what I'm
then
saying.
It's the next step that we would want to take, have the board take in amending that provision, and that's the work plan that Kat set
right,
up.
But this is a pilot program, so presumably we're going to wait for the facility to be constructed, operating, to evaluate its real life. I mean, you can speculate about its impacts. And I'm in favor of this, but I just want to make sure, you know, that we don't, misrepresent our intent to members of the public who were so adamantly opposed to the facility that was originally proposed for Kings Beach. And so presumably you have pilot programs to demonstrate the efficacy of the process. But it sounds to me like we're not going to wait for the facility to be constructed and operating to evaluate its real life impacts in terms of reducing vehicle miles traveled, in terms of generating sufficient energy to meet the ancillary needs of the South Lake Tahoe refuge facility. So I'm just a little confused about how long this is likely to take.
I think we're, maybe pilot project. We're using that term in relation to the lifting of the moratorium for a particular project, and having one project coming forward and establishing the fact that there is new and improved information relevant to that particular project to allow the executive director to lift the moratorium. So that, in the sense that it's pilot, we're and Kat, correct me if I'm wrong, we're not intending to delay the examination of the overall policy, which is what Kat was talking about with the CTC grant, several years to wait until that project gets on the ground and then operates for a period of time. So I agree with you. We should be clear to the public that that's not, we weren't intent. Correct.
Thank you very much. Any other comments by any of the board members or committee members? Yes, Jeff Tillman, you have a comment? Yeah, I'll allow you.
Yeah, I just wanted to make one quick comment. I want to thank TRPA staff and all the agencies and members and people that have got involved with us over the last year and, try to push this forward, look at all the problems, look at all the pitfalls, see what it should look like. You know, there's been a huge community gathering for this particular project, and I really appreciate all the people that have got involved with us, especially TRPA staff. Kat came down and saw our facility and got answers to all the questions she didn't want to know about garbage. So it's been, it's just been a great process, to get to this point here today. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, with that, I think we will close our agenda item on that matter. And we are now on agenda item number 4, committee member comments on anything else. Do we have any other further comments by committee members? Okay, I see no hands raised. With that, our final matter of business is our general public interest comment period. If any member of the public wishes to address the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee at this time, please raise your hand now, or if you're in person, please come forward to the podium. I see no one coming to the podium. Maria, do we have any further public comment on this?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised for public comment.
Thank you very much. That brings us to our final action. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The meeting is adjourned at 12:15, and we will be going to the governing board meeting at what time?
In 5 minutes, and the governing board meeting will go through the consent agenda items, and then we'll take a lunch break.
Okay, thank you. 5 minutes to the governing board meeting. Thank you.
All right.